You probably know that as-a-service models are a key part of a circular economy. But what are the opportunities, benefits, and practicalities of shifting from selling products to providing services? Welcome to the Circular Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Wheatman, and I started this podcast to help people discover why circular, regenerative, and fair solutions are better for people, planet, and prosperity. Some people think going circular means swapping a few materials or making things a bit more recyclable. But that's nowhere near enough to create a healthy, resilient, and zero carbon world where we can all thrive. Many organisations are missing the game-changing potential of going circular. The disruptors in this space are using circular strategies to reimagine how to create value for all their stakeholders. They're doing better with less. We'll hear from those inspiring people who are challenging business as usual and rethinking how we design, make and use everything. You'll find the show notes and links at circulareconomypodcast.com, where you can subscribe to podcast updates, my Circular Insights newsletter, and check out my award-winning A Circular Economy Handbook. It's episode 127. Welcome back. Thanks, as always, for listening and helping to spread the word on all things circular. In this episode, I'm talking to Yann Toutant, the founder of Black Winch, which helps businesses understand the opportunities, practicalities and benefits of shifting to as-a-service models and supports them in making it happen. Yann has been implementing subscription-based models for hardware in the ICT industry for 25 years, including over a decade as CEO of Econocom's Dutch operations. Today, with his own company, Black Winch, Yann Toutant helps CEOs and their teams to focus on the user experience by incorporating all components of as-a-service offers into a single in-house, comprehensive and scalable subscription model. Yann sees offering a doorway to the circular economy as one of the main drivers, making it possible to centralise ownership and to industrialise circularity at scale. We discussed the reasons that as-a-service is becoming more popular for business customers as well as for people in general. And then Yann talks about some of the benefits for service-based businesses and how Black Winch helps its clients take the first easy steps to get started on that journey. Yann explains how, for some products, as-a-service is likely to exist alongside traditional ownership models, and what he sees as the motivators for that. Let's join the conversation with Yann Toutant, and afterwards I'll share my takeaways. We start with Yann explaining the concept behind Black Winch.
It's quite simple. I always take the example of the subscription we all use for Netflix or Spotify, where, you know, we were used to go to the record renting store to rent a DVD before Netflix, and now with Netflix we just, you know, use as much content as we want, and that's this shift that we all have forgotten now. This shift is happening in a lot of industries. And Black Winch is here to help to make this shift. So how to turn a product-based business into a subscription. That's how we would describe ourselves in a very, very simple way.
Yeah, that's good. And that reminds me of, it's one of the lessons of failing to see the future, isn't it? The story of Blockbuster laughing the Netflix founders out of the room. And thinking this is just never going to happen. And of course, now it's completely normal for an awful lot of people. So where do you see opportunities for businesses to offer as a service instead of selling physical products?
Yeah, well, it's not only an opportunity, but I would say it's an obligation for businesses to start to think this way and to act this way, not only think, but also act this way. Because for the new generation, it's the norm. And, you know, I have a son, he's 23, and I said, you want a car? He says, what are you talking about? You know, I just need mobility. I don't need a car. And when I was his age, I mean, car for me was so important. It was part of my personal development, you know, to have a car. So I would say for the new generation is the norm, and the buyers of tomorrow will be into subscribing and not buying. And of course, I'm giving some here B2C examples, but it's also very important in a B2B environment that organizations are looking for resources and outcome and not products.
Yeah. And just going back to the younger generation, what do you think lies behind that desire to just have access to things instead of owning them? You know, is it about, I don't want to spend the money on this? Is it about, I don't want the hassle of having to look after it, or something else?
I think option two, what you mentioned, the hassle of having to look after this is an important one. I think all the young generation have seen their parents being, you know, the slave of their possessions, and they don't want to repeat that. And I think I would add another one also is the fact that there is, you know, the time to market of new products now is very fast. When you look at the time television took to reach every household, and when you look at the time that you know, for example, smartphones reach all the households, it's much faster. So there is also a need to have access to new technologies and new services as soon as they arrive on the market. So they don't want to be, you know, burdened by the ownership of a technology or a service that is not in line with what the market has to offer today. They want immediately access to new solutions, new technologies. So yeah, that's also an important point.
Sure, yeah. And what other benefits are there for businesses and their customers?
Well, if you take the angle of the businesses, I used to say that well, two angles, two points. Really, as a business, if you want to push an as a service offer as a business, what are the benefits? The first benefit is, of course, the recurring revenues. So the predictability of your future income. And when you have subscribers to your services, you have what we call the MRR, the monthly recurring revenue, which becomes the holy grail of the valuation of your company. So this is a way to increase the valuation of the company because you can sell future incomes. That's the first one. The second one is the stickiness of the customers / users that will you know, stay loyal to your service. Just think how long you've been subscribing to Netflix. Just realize how much you've spent to Netflix without realizing it. I'm thinking since the start, so I'm maybe 10 years a subscriber of Netflix.
Wow, I'm not at all. But yeah, it's to do with my Yorkshire genes. But anyway, yes, lots of people subscribe, and then it, as you say, we recognise that we receive this service, and we're, you know, as long as it's good value, then we're happy to carry on paying.
Exactly. Exactly. So you have a good customer loyalty associated to usership and as a service business models. And the one I mentioned at last, but should be the first, is to enter into circular business models, which is, of course, the theme of your podcast. And I always mention it at the end, because if I start talking to a business about circularity, very often I lose the audience. But if I start to talk about recurring revenues and customer loyalty, of course, I get a lot of traction. And by the way, this is the Trojan horse or the keystone to enter into circular business model. And of course, we can talk more in details about it. So the three benefits: recurring revenues, loyal customers, circular business models.
Excellent. And that's really interesting that people's eyes kind of glaze over when you start talking about circular, if you start lead in with circular business models. So yes, I think that ties into some of the things we've heard on the podcast about the difficult conversations with some of the functional stakeholders in the decision process. You know, that salespeople might object to selling refurbished products because they think it will cannibalize the sales of new. And of course, the perception is it's more hassle because, you know, you've got to convince people that it's going to be as good as new and all those kind of barriers. So finding the attractive parts of this new approach, I think, are really key to getting the conversations going. So yeah.
Catherine, if I may jump on what you just said, the discussions about refurbished product will might cannibalize our main market. It's still a mindset about thinking selling products, so it's still a wrong mindset. The
Exactly.
right mindset is about selling an outcome, no matter the product. So if the discussions are still the one you mentioned, the mindset shift is still not made. It still has to happen.
Yes, I agree, but I think it's an and thing, depending on the product and depending on the motivation of the customer. So if we go back to the car example, there may be people like you and me who would prefer to own a car. Me, because I live out in the sticks, so trying to rent one is even more hassle than having one handy. And I have elderly parents, so I sometimes need to be able to go there. For other people, it may be that it's still part of our identity and status. But then for the younger generation, the downsides of owning are, higher than they want to live with, the kind of burden of it. So I think both, if for some products, both options can exist. And the whole point is that we need to be designing products so that they last longer. And in the as a service model, that means the business has the asset for longer and can make more recurring revenue off it from it. And in the selling products model, it means the customer or the provider has the opportunity to resell that, and if it's designed well, to refurbish it, remanufacture it, and so on, and again get more turns out of that same product. So I think the two things can kind of coexist, and the design and extra value for the business is kind of very similar from, there are plus points in both of them, and some companies may want to offer both things.
Yes, it's good to make it clear what you just mentioned. As a service, will not replace the existing model of selling a product and transferring the ownership to the user. This remains. This is not one or the other. I agree with you that for some specific applications, it's better to have ownership, and from specific applications, better to be the user. Yes, I fully agree. It's not one or the other. It's not black and white.
I mean, it may be for some products, but then other products, it could be both. So, what led you to do this in the first place? What drew you towards providing these services for businesses?
Well, first of all, experience. So, 25 years of experience in the leasing world, in the asset leasing world. Of course, that creates a lot of expertise. And I've realized that by having discussions with manufacturers, OEMs, that they still have the mindset of a linear business model, which is I produce, I sell, I transfer the ownership, and I produce again and again and again and again. And this mindset is what is going against a circular business model and the respect of the environment that is associated to it. So basically, it's taking out resources from the ground and just producing to transfer the ownership to the end user. Oh, yeah, to the end user, without keeping the responsibility of a cradle-to-cradle approach of this production of an asset. And what really strikes me the most is that a lot of organizations are working on a supply chain that is carbon neutral. But when this device that has been going through this amazing supply chain, neutral, carbon neutral supply chain, when the device arrives on the desk or in a factory or at the user, the story stops because the ownership is being transferred to this buyer, and then the manufacturer has no more access to this device, to this asset that has been produced and shipped in such a mindful way to be as carbon neutral as possible. But then the story stops where the story should continue to offer the best operational performance of this product and to keep it as long as possible in use. And then when it's really completely drained after five, six users, collecting it back and repurposing it or refurbishing it or recycling it properly. When a manufacturer has this whole picture in mind, then they will start to do some eco design and to have goods being produced, knowing that one day they will come back.
Yes, I think
So, yeah.
just to add to that, I was listening to a podcast with a circular economy hero of mine, Hugo Spowers, at River Simple, and they're designing cars as a service. So it's a hydrogen fuel cell car. But he was talking about the difference in the business models between what River Simple are doing and conventional cars or automotive system, whereby their objective is to sell as many cars as possible and make the ownership of those cars, i.e. the servicing and so on, as lucrative as possible for the for their dealerships. And what River Simple are doing is designing a car that can last 20 years at least, instead of the typical 10 to 12 years that a car lasts. They'll be offering the car with the fuel and all the maintenance as a service. So there'll be multiple cycles, and the older the car is, the less you pay for the monthly rental. The fuel costs are the same. So of course it's then in River Simple's interests to design this car to be efficient, reliable, and to last as long as possible, and for it to be easy to upgrade. So if some better technology comes along, maybe for the, electric motors on the wheels or something, River Simple can swap that in and both parties benefit. And I think this approach of thinking about the products that you're making as your future asset is really important. And any kind of contrasted what happens at the end of life of a car. So in Europe, for automotive manufacturers, that's a 200 euro liability because they've paid EPR for it. For River Simple, they'll be getting an asset back because they've designed it so that they can take the valuable materials out, reuse components, and so on. So it's a completely different approach, and I think creates a much more resilient and attractive business model for the investors.
Would agree. Would agree. I will top up with another example, which is air conditioning manufacturer whom I have discussions with, and they were saying, "Look, our devices are full of copper, and copper the last 20 years has been multiplied by I don't recall the multiplier, but I think it's 10 or 15. The price of copper has just gone through the roof." And they were saying me, yeah, if I was able today to retrieve and to collect all the cooling units we've been selling the last 20 years, wow, the company situation would be completely different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this kind of mindset is going to become more and more important for businesses. So yeah, I think there's so many excellent advantages to moving towards an as a service business model. So in when you talk to new clients, what kind of process do you go through to help them, to support them in this transition?
Yeah, it's very important to make it easy and not too heavy lifting, because what we are talking about now, we're talking about a complete new supply chain and eco design. Well, this is like, ooh, it's gonna take me years to put that in motion. So what can I do today, to ignite this journey? What can I do next Monday in my next board meeting? And so the first aspect is to make an analysis of the eligibility of the business model to move towards subscription, to move toward as a service. So the first step, without thinking about eco design and reverse logistics, etc., the first step is to say, let's organize ourselves so we can offer our customers to use our product and services instead of buying them. That's the first step. And this requires already quite some work to be done. And we would then, to make sure this is doable, we would make an audit. It takes a month or two to measure the eligibility of this organization to move towards providing product and services into a subscription. We would look at the type of assets, the type of markets they are working on, the company culture, the sales model, if it's direct or indirect. And the financial structure also of the company to be able to manage this new way of managing the cash flows. And that would bring a very simple report with some recommendations to move forward. Some people might call it leasing. I don't want to call it leasing because it includes also some aspects related to including some services attached to the product. And also to include some flexibility, like opt-in, opt-out, or a pay-per-use model, which is further developed than leasing. But the mindset could be a bit the same, saying like, let's stop transferring ownership, provide a subscription, which is also different from a payment plan. So it's not like, okay, you can't pay, so we're gonna split the payment over four years. It's also different from that. So to make it very, very easy to digest, it's a 2 months interaction with different stakeholders in the organization to measure the eligibility and to see how easy it will be to implement it or not.
And then does the client kind of take that forward themselves, or are there support services that you can provide for them? Like the software to do it, or the means of tracking where products are, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very depending on every organization. Some of our customers already offer a subscription-based model and want to include a circularity aspect to it. So we're going to help them in this case on a very specific, I would say, niche assignment. But for organizations that start from scratch, indeed, we would provide recommendations. And then when it comes to implementing those recommendations, either we coach someone internally to make it happen, the internal champion, or we would take the load out of the organization and manage some of the aspects of the implementation. And also we have quite some tools and digital solutions to manage some aspects of the implementation. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. And we've talked a little bit about what's holding businesses back and what gets in the way, starting with the fact that it's a circular business model, which might put people off at the outset. But what other kind of things are holding businesses back?
Very often, we see two bottlenecks when it comes to the execution. The first one, or it's not there's no first or second, but one of them is financial department that has difficulties to project themselves into a subscription-based business model where they are used to, transfer the ownership and then have a cash to order that is very short. Where what we hear from financial departments say, look, this customer is going to take 5 years to pay us. where now he's taking 2 months to pay us. So how do we manage that? You know, how do we manage the cash flow associated to it? How do we recognize this revenue? How do we recognize our profitability? We are a stock listed business. We can't play with our revenue recognition, and therefore our market capitalization. So there is very often some resistance at the finance team to fear the negative impact on the business model. And of course, there are solutions for that.
And what kind of solutions? I mean, you know, ones that come to mind for me are that you could start with one customer demographic or you know, one small group of products and kind of transition from there. I guess other solutions might be to ask a circular economy minded bank to help finance it. So what other kind of creative solutions do you suggest?
So first of all is to demystify the model and to have discussions with the finance team, and also very often to include the auditors, because the revenue recognition stamp would say comes from the auditors. So it's also to include the auditors in the discussion and to explain and to give some live examples of organizations that are already there and have tackled those issues of cash and revenue recognition. So it's not to be creative, it's to use some solutions that exist on the market that are not known very often from the CFOs. As you mentioned, for example, working with a bank that has also some ESG targets, and to combine financing of the solution with these banks in a clever way. It would be too technical if I would enter into the details now, but yeah, so it's possible. Let me say it this way: it's possible to have a recurring business model based on users without transferring the ownership of the equipment, while keeping or maintaining the revenue recognition as it is today. So this is possible.
That's good, and I'm presuming this isn't always a one-off process for clients, that companies may engage you to begin with, take some baby steps, and then bring you back in to think about, well, how do we now take it to the next level?
Exactly. So it's about pilots, it's about framing it, it's about ring fencing it. As you said, start with a specific product line, start with a specific vertical, start with a specific country, but make it small and have a pilot, of course, and then grow the pilot based on the learnings. What we also say sometimes very often is like dedicate a budget to it also. Say, okay, we dedicate 1 million or 5 million of contract value to this model, and we see what it does. That's a way to make it you know, to have to facilitate the acceptation and the sign-off.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because then everybody's kind of focused on how's this tracking along, what benefits have we brought in so far, and it's kind of much more of a solid project, isn't it, in company terms?
It's innovation best practice. It's change management best practice. This has nothing to do with as a service. In fact, it's true for any new service, new product, new offer.
So, Jan, I'm interested to know, in the process of evolving this and building Black Winch as a business, is there anything that you've struggled with or anything that's particularly surprised you along the way?
Well, what has surprised me positively, a positive surprise, is when you talk to large organizations, very often it's difficult for them to navigate internally with concepts like this one. So we often identify champions that that see the benefits and that see the whole picture of what would their company look like if they would offer a subscription-based model. And then those champions are very often left alone against the cultural challenges, change the culture, against some organizations that have difficulties on their core business and would then focus on what they are good at and time for innovation. So I think my surprise is that you see people who see the light, you know, they see the benefit, they see the outcome for their own organization, and they have so much challenges to spread the news internally and to have people following this vision and implementing it and scaling it, that the model has difficulties to land. Yeah, that's my bigger surprise to the obviousness of the benefits and the lack of traction to really gear up and implement and make it happen on short notice. Yeah.
Yes, I'm with you on that, having worked in lots of massive businesses, and the last one that I worked for was very much like a super tanker in terms of trying to do anything to change direction. Yeah, and it's something that Clayton Christensen back in the 90s talked about in his best-selling book, The Innovator's Dilemma, where he looked specifically at what kinds of things held businesses back and made them focus on what he called sustaining innovations, which were all about making what you already do a little bit better instead of disruptive innovations. And I think there are lots of lessons in that, because he talks about company culture. He talks about the innovation process. And when I was reading about that, I was thinking, actually, this process that he's describing that doesn't work is pretty much the same as the one that I helped develop at DHL when we were looking around at innovation best practice. And it all results in kind of, more of the same instead of what you're really after. So
Agree.
yeah, that was a bit of a wake-up call. So Jan, if you're talking there are people listening to this podcast who will be thinking about, should I be introducing as a service into my business, or maybe should I be starting something as a service? So what top tip would you offer those people?
As usual, start with the end in mind. So have the holistic view of the life cycle of the asset that you're going to provide into the subscription. What I mean from cradle to cradle is really to think about a model where the asset and the services are going to be disposed at the end properly and to have the complete holistic view of the life cycle of this asset, including different users, including different users. Very often, because we are used to transfer the ownership to a user, we think, okay, the subscription will be short-minded approach we have. So it's really to disconnect the life cycle and the usage of an asset from its users. And that will make sure that you have a vision of your as a service offer that is the most real and less surprising as possible. That would be my first tip. And the second tip is really to avoid anything related to finance. It has nothing to do with finance or leasing or payment plan or whatsoever. It's not, you're not going to offer as a service because people can't afford it. It's not because people can't pay upfront that they're going to use it. It has nothing to do with that. It's really about it's really about managing a complete outcome-based offer for people who are looking for an outcome and not a product.
Yeah, providing the convenience, the added value experiences, all the other things that the customers want. Great stuff. And I know you don't lead with circular economy when you're talking to people about what you do, but is there a circular economy example that you particularly like when people are kind of saying, well, what are these circular business models? Is there something that you often use as an example?
I have I have a lot of examples, of course, of our business models. There's one example that is for me very very, I would say, explanatory when it comes to circular business model is and again, I insist on focusing on the outcome because what you are looking for when you subscribe to as a service is to look for an outcome. And when you really look for an outcome, you don't mind the asset, you don't mind the product. So this example I have is called KR. It's in Singapore. They're based in
Oh
Singapore.
yes, I know them, and I have a slide that's starting to appear in more and more of my talks. So KAER in
Exactly.
Singapore offering cooling as a service.
As a service, exactly, yeah, or climate control as a service. And basically, they work with large office buildings or shopping malls to make sure that the climate control will be as expected. So they are selling an outcome of a certain level of humidity and certain level of certain temperature. And they're not selling at all the equipment, the refrigeration towers that create this. And it took them about 5 years to make this transition from selling those equipment to selling the outcome. And now they are 100% outcome based, which allow them to completely disconnect the service from the device and then to have good collaboration with the manufacturers of those devices to have them being made available and refurbished, recycled when the life cycle is finished. So the end user is not being sold any specs or any cubic meters per hour capacities or whatsoever. It's just selling a climate control. That's the contract is about climate control.
Yes.
So for me, that's a great example of how you disconnect the product from the outcome. And then you can really be in charge as a supplier of the product that you use to deliver the service and being able to manage it in, of course, in your interest to keep it as long as possible and to have good connection with the manufacturers to have it into a life cycle management. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I particularly like that example. Thanks, Jan. And looking at the bigger picture, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing to help create a better world, what would that be?
Yeah, it's to have and it's coming, but it's to have regulation and taxonomy that really favors as a service. Because when the manufacturers are not making it happen, if they get it requested by the users and with a financial incentive to make it happen, then they will have to go for it. I'm a strong believer that the climate changes we are facing are the consequence of the planned obsolescence economical model we are in, starting in the 30s, about 100 years ago, and that this idea of extracting raw materials, producing a good, transferring the ownership, and then it's not my problem, I'm going to get more resources and continue this cycle, is about 100 years old. And the as users, as consumers or as businesses, I think we have the responsibility to say back to the manufacturers, look, I'm not the one that has the responsibility to recycle or repurpose what you've produced, because today that's the case. Yeah. So why do you transfer this responsibility to me while you are using raw materials and resources that you use only once, and I'm the one who has the responsibility to find a solution to get rid of this equipment. And of course, I will do it badly because I have only one of your equipment. Where, as a manufacturer, if you own them all, you have millions of them, and you can organize properly the life cycle of this equipment. So for me, the magic stick would be like suddenly every business and every consumer says, no, I don't want to be the owner of this device. I just want to use it. And the magic stick could be taxonomy to make it more appealing to use than.
Yes, I think that would be really transformational, and hopefully more and more people are starting to get on board with the advantages of using instead of owning, and can really push it forward. I know there's lots of conversation on LinkedIn, particularly about not making this the consumer's problem. I hate that word. I'd rather say citizens. But we as buyers, whether that's in our home life or in our business life, we can vote with our wallets for the things that we want, and we can reject the things that we don't want. So we can, by giving a signal to companies that we want this service, we don't want the burden of ownership, then we can start to make things happen. And of course, the businesses have got to be willing as well, but by signalling this, and looking for things that are available as a service, we can start to make the market shift.
Correct. So the question is, every time now myself, for the business, but also as a citizen, I always ask myself, can I subscribe? When I'm about to buy something, I'm always, can I subscribe to this instead of buying this? That's always the question that anyone should ask himself. Also, but also as a business, can we subscribe as a company? Can we subscribe to this service, to this outcome, instead of buying this product?
And particularly for those things where the expertise is much more likely to lie with the provider, like in the care cooling as a service example. You're buying in all the expertise to help that equipment run really efficiently and effectively. So, Jan, before we tell people how they can connect and find out more, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, yes, one thing that when I read the news and I get some information feed, I'm always surprised by how the environmental issues are back on the news every day. And I'm always asking myself, what can I do? What can I do? Because I have kids and they will have kids, and when I see the projections of the quality of the environment that they will live in, it's not very exciting. So I'm always asking, what can I do? And I would say, as a service, I have found an answer. So the message for me is really to connect as a service to the need of respect of the environment, and to really make sure that everybody understands that owning is not compatible with the number of human beings on this planet, and we should be using and not owning a product and sharing more of those products. And so my message is that as a citizen, and I like you mentioned citizen, is to take the responsibility to have actions to increase the respect of the environment. And I think there's a solution that is very easy to activate, is to use instead of owning. Yeah, that's
Yeah, great, thank you. And so, how can people find out more and get in touch with you and the team at Black Winch?
yeah, of course, we have a website, so blackwinch.eu. We have also a LinkedIn page, Black Winch. And myself also is easy to reach out on LinkedIn. I will answer the messages. So yeah, it's if you just Google blackwinch.eu, you will find every resources also, and much more content about what we discussed, and also ways to reach out.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jan, for taking us through that. And it was fascinating to hear how as a service models are evolving and about the kind of support that you give to businesses in helping them make it happen. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine, also for your work to promote circular business models.
It feels like there's so much untapped potential here. and Black Winch is playing a vital role in helping accelerate a service-based economy. As Jan explained, the younger generations don't see the need to own expensive things, things that might evolve quickly, things that might be a hassle to own. They don't want to buy cars, they want convenient mobility services. And this trend for services instead of ownership is just as relevant for business-to-business customers as well. It was interesting to hear Jan talking about the benefits, firstly of regular recurring revenues, what he called MRR, monthly recurring revenue, and especially how that can make a positive difference to the way your company is valued by investors. Secondly, selling services improves customer loyalty or stickiness. Some of that relates to the inconvenience of switching to another provider, and some will be from other positive aspects, how businesses engage their customers, perhaps offer different types of service to meet a range of needs, maybe offer loyalty benefits, or involve customers in shaping what's offered, and so on. I was fascinated to hear that Jan leads with those two benefits and gains traction with his audience. And he leaves the discussion about circular business models to the end, because he's found if he leads with that, he often loses the audience. In previous episodes, we've talked about the concerns shared by sales teams, that selling pre-used or refurbished products will reduce the sales of new products. Jan suggests focusing on selling outcomes rather than selling products. I mentioned the interview I'd heard with Hugo Spowers, the founder of River Simple, an innovative car-as-a-service business launching soon in Wales. I've included a link to the podcast I mentioned in the show notes, and it covers the innovation around the car itself, both for the engine and the rest of the car, the business model, and the governance or guardianship of the company itself. Hugo Spowers had explained that at the end of a car's normal life in Europe, the extended product responsibility tax for the car manufacturer becomes a €200 liability, whereas for River Simple, the end-of-life car is a valuable asset. Because the car's designed for a much longer life and designed for it to be easy to recover value from the parts and materials. Coming back to this podcast, Jan talked about the difficulties that big companies encounter. Even if they appoint a champion for the as-a-service project and that person sees the light, the beneficial outcomes for the business, all too often they then face many difficulties in overcoming the cultural challenges in pushing against the core business strategy. That resonated with me from my decades of working for and with big multinationals. And I mentioned Clayton Christensen's book, The Innovator's Dilemma, which unpicks the key reasons for that inability to disrupt the existing business model. There's a link in the show notes. I've also included a link to Jan's book, As a Service, which is available for download. So that's it for this episode of the Circular Economy podcast. Thank you to our guest this week, Jan Toutant of Black Winch, and thanks also to Barry O'Kane, Marie-Neige Roux, and Céline Ponson for making the interview possible. You can find out more about Jan Toutant of Black Winch and check out the other links we mentioned in the show notes at circulareconomypodcast.com. The Circular Economy Podcast is brought to you by Rethink Global, the company I started to help you succeed with circular. You can find information on my talks, workshops and advice, plus circular economy resources at rethinkglobal.info. And you can connect with me, Catherine Wheatman, on LinkedIn. I believe we can all help make the circular economy happen through the choices we make at work and in our everyday lives. Buying pre-used, keeping what we have for longer, repairing it and making sure it has another life. Those choices send strong signals to companies and governments, making it clear we all want a better, circular and regenerative future. we can do better with less. We can all help spread the word too. Talk about the circular economy and help other people find this podcast by leaving us a rating and a review on your podcast app. If you're just starting out with the circular economy, why not check out our Getting Started playlist on the podcast homepage? You could also buy my award-winning book, A Circular Economy Handbook, How to Build a More Resilient, Competitive and Sustainable Business. It takes you through the concepts and practicalities with hundreds of real examples from all around the world. We've made it easier for you to find episodes on the key circular economy strategies, or for a market sector, or specific countries. Check out the Interactive Podcast Index. There's a link on the podcast homepage at circulareconomypodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening to the end, and if you like what you're hearing, please hit subscribe. And I'll see you next time.